Hey folks, do you have a succession plan in place for your fire department? Well, today we're going to talk about professional development and a few steps you can take to get started in that direction for your organization. We'll also be discussing the role of a company officer and who might have the most influence over the members of your department. All that more in the next edition of Tailboard Talk, coming up right after this.
Think fast. In the short time it takes to listen to this message, a small flame can turn into a big fire. Several minutes more, and thick, poisonous smoke may have filled your lungs and reduced your ability to respond. Give it 5, and your entire home may be filled with flames.
Keep breathing. We've got you.
Don't let your world go up in smoke. Have working smoke alarms and practice an escape plan for you and your loved ones. Learn more at usfa.fema.gov, because fire is everyone's fight.
Welcome to Tailboard Talk with Dane Carley, Craig Nelson, and Jeff Wallen. Every month we explore different topics of interest to you, our cohorts in fire and emergency services. So whether you sit back and listen, sound off on the message board, or call in live to be part of the conversation, we welcome you to join us in our mission to improve the fire service for those we serve and those we serve beside. Now coming to you live from the Great White North, this is Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Tailboard Talk for Friday, October 4th, 2019. I'm Jeff.
I'm Craig.
And Chris.
Hi, Chris.
How's it going, guys?
Ah, fine.
Dane's sick today.
Dane's sick.
Yeah.
Well, well.
Yeah. Well, I've heard him described as a pretty sick individual.
Yeah. I've known he's sick for years.
Apparently he's confirming that today.
To tell everybody.
Didn't need a doctor's note.
Oh, so he's taking it one day at a time is what you're saying. That's how to work that cutoff.
Yeah, the gratuitous shot at the guy that's not here.
Right.
You gotta do it.
You gotta do
we
it.
Don't make the rules, we just play by them.
Nice. Well, maybe if the show goes as planned, it won't be the only time we can get a knock against Dane this evening while he's not here.
We'll slide those in whenever we can.
There we go.
Because we owe him that. But... yeah, tonight we thought we would discuss the role of the company officer in the fire department. And there have been obviously a lot of different articles about it, and most of them discuss how important that company officer or captain or lieutenant role is in the department. And I would agree with it, and we just thought that would be a kind of a good topic to talk about the why that's so critical, and also the opposite of it being a positive is what happens if it's a negative, because again they're impacting more than just one person there.
Yes, I was going to say I completely disagree with your opinion, and I feel that the deputy fire chief's position is the most important influential position of any fire department organization, and if you don't have a deputy chief, you should get one. They're great.
Not another desk guy.
That's what we need. Oh, yeah. My desk puts out so many fires. I need to put red lights and a siren on it. Leaves me fulfilled every day.
Well, this is one of those topics that, again, it comes up quite a bit. And part of the conversation we wanted to have with this is, in Fargo, we've recently started a new officer or professional development program. And we're going into our fourth month of it, so it's very new, and we're still making adjustments and trying to learn and grow with it, because we want it to be as effective as possible. But some background on it is it started, we've looked at it many, many times over the years, and I truly realize now why we haven't had one is because it's a lot easier said than done, like most things. It's one of those where, yeah, let's do that, we should do that, and everybody agrees, but how you do it, when do you do it, how do you schedule this thing, do you do it off duty, do you do it on duty's busy, crews are busy, they got calls, they got objectives, all kinds of things going on, when do you do it, how do you do it, who teaches it, what topics, it kind of goes on and on and on, and we kicked it around long enough, we said, we're just going to start with something and try it. And so we still, again, it's new enough, we don't know if it's really working well yet, but we're trying something. And we looked at it and we went, we take and we hire a new person and we put them through in Fargo. It's an 8 week or a 2 month training course that's very specific, covers certain objectives, certain amounts of time, very, very laid out, planned out, thought out. And then even the rest of their first probationary year is the same thing, where they get done with their recruit class and graduate from that. Now they actually have continued work on certifications and objectives and tasks and all that stuff, again, is very well laid out that first year. And then they successfully complete that, and they're done, and it kind of drops off after that. As far as our official guidance on it, our department's always had a lot of training opportunities and quite a few even outside, but it's more on the individual. And so what we're looking for is something that kind of helps support that and then also fills in the gaps. So when you look at like a company officer certification, well, that's covering in a lot of cases different things than what our professional development is. Our professional development is covering more the actual tasks that they're going to do. So how do you do a run report? What are the things you should be doing when you're filling in? What are the best practices, suggestions from other officers that have been here a while, that kind of stuff.
So, Craig, I'm familiar with it, but who's the audience?
And that's something that's kind of changed too, and to be honest, not exactly sure. It started out, and it still is, the primary target audience would be those that are starting to fill in and those that are preparing to be a company officer. So in our department, you can't apply to be a captain or a company officer until you've got 5 years on. So really, you start getting 3-4 years on, you see our personnel start to fill in as company officers when they're gone. And so I would say it targets those people with 3-4 years on, 5 years directly. But also, if you're a new captain, that you're going to get a chance to hear from other captains, other BCs, this is how you should do this, or this is how I done it and it's worked, or I tried it this way and it doesn't, to get their experience in on a lot of those different topics. So kind of it started as, and I think we actually called it officer development initially, and now we've changed it to professional development because it's for more than just the officers. And then the idealistic side of it is, it's for everybody. So even senior officers could learn from another senior officer, hey, I do this, and, oh, I never thought of that. And so to share some of those processes and operations and ideas and things that have worked.
Right, you know, and then in the shift that I'm involved in, you know, we have a pretty good participation in it. Just so everyone knows that it's a go-to-meeting type situation. We schedule it later on in the day. Yep. And it's not mandatory for anybody, but you know, on the shift that I'm involved in, we strongly encourage it. And I think we're getting pretty good participation. Of course, I'm not at every station to hold their hand or anything to make sure they're sitting there, but they're logged in. Looks like they're participating. We ask a lot of questions, and we specifically ask station questions, so they jump in there and go from there. So, yeah, it goes from the brand new guy all the way to a senior captain, all the way to the battalion chiefs that are sitting in it, and even the assistant chiefs that are giving it are learning through the process too. So I think it's worked out well. It's kind of spun off of, and we're still going to do this, we do a captain/officer development day where we bring in guest speakers. We talk about department-specific things that we want to accomplish, from even doing how to do a run report so we can get the right data, to you know, how are we going to do training this year, things like that. So it's a compliment. It's on top of it. It's bigger. It's all kinds of pretty neat things. Gives some guys some opportunities. What I liked about it was the way I learned coming through the fire service was by fault sometimes. I just happened to be standing in the wrong place at the right time, and I got handed the budget or handed a program to run, or, you know, do this or do
or right promotion.
Promotion by accident. And, you know, so I mean, it was, to be honest with you, I'll be very frank with people. When I became a battalion chief, the way our department operates, I'm involved in the chief officer's meetings. And you throw a slide of budget in front of me, I couldn't even read that thing the first time. No. I had no idea. And I had no idea how the budget even came about. You know, so that's something that I think these guys should learn early. learn often, remind them. You know, many of those programs, not just one of them. Our department has moved into accreditation. You know, we're an ISO 1. What does that entail? You know, all these things come into play that I learned the hard way. Why not learn the right way mm-hmm. in the beginning of my career?
And that's kind of the way we develop the topics for it is kind of that school of hard knocks. Mm-hmm. My hunch is we might not be the only department that you get a promotion, you get more responsibility, and all of a sudden you get a huge learning curve with it because you didn't have a whole lot of preparatory training for it. Right. You had some, but that's what we're trying to address and go, it's better to address it ahead of time. So just like you're saying, before you need to deal with a budget, let's get you a little bit familiar with the process, how it works, the timing of it, who has what parts of it, how it gets approved, that kind of stuff. And we were just talking about a little bit ago before we started the show, the purchasing. And I know that's one I think of. You give the budget example, and that's a great example because I was in the same boat. And I look at purchasing. Purchasing, there's a learning curve with it because we have very specific rules on how you can purchase, what you can purchase, when. and so it's learning to follow those rules. But also having the ability to do it when it's appropriate and you need to be making those purchases. If you know what you're doing and how, then you're more comfortable doing it. So going through that stuff with people so they understand that depending on the size of the purchase, depending on the type of purchase, there are different elements involved. And one of it might be funding and realizing that really the budget's always a year out. Well, that's something I never knew as a firefighter. I didn't care, but it didn't affect me. Well, what we're trying to do is get ahead of that now and go, we'll teach the guys. We'll show them that, yeah, the budget's a year out. So if it's a big item that we need to budget for, if we can get it and if it goes in the budget, it's still going to be a year to 2 years out.
It's purchasing is difficult, and I don't want to get into a big long talk about this, but it's the purchasing show. Yeah. I've spent 25 years learning how to purchase, and I've spent 25 years asking for forgiveness, and it's almost become a habit of mine. I'm sorry. Just kind of look around and, okay, don't do it again.
Managing by apology. I see this book coming out from you. I see it being a bestseller. Yeah.
But that's
I got a pretty good dad. Read many chapters on that.
In our department, our company officers make a lot of purchases. The city issues them credit cards, which I think is fantastic, but it gives them a lot of responsibility and a lot of leeway to what you purchase and when and how and why and how much can you spend. And for the most part, they're really good about if it gets into higher dollar amounts or they're unsure, they'll call to their BC and, hey, what are you thinking on this? And usually the BC has guidance, but if the BC is going, you know, I'm just going to call the chief just to make sure. Yeah, just to do a double check. So the system works pretty well, but that's not the stuff that's going to be on a company officer certification exam.
No, or class.
Yeah, or in the class. And a lot of that's because it's specific to your the entity you work for or within, but so that we're trying to cover some of that stuff so that they're familiar with it. And I look at this last month we covered accreditation and ISO, and one, it actually brought my understanding of ISO to a much higher level. I have a much more in-depth understanding of it, and I knew our points. I knew the categories, and I knew roughly the points in the categories, but it forced us to dive as a department a lot deeper into it, and then even at our staff meeting, we had a discussion that went deeper into ISO than I've ever been,
right.
And came up with some good discussion and thoughts on it, on how we could improve our points and so forth.
Right. What I liked about this development program that we've been working on is we actually started out from step one with it. We started out with the history of the Fargo Fire Department. Okay, here's the history of it, why did it become a department, what's gone on and through the series of years, and how we got to where we're at now. And I'm a big believer in, you should know where you came from to know where you're going. Doesn't mean you're stuck in the old, but you should know where your base was. So you take those ideas and grow from it. And I know I have a history of the Fargo Fire Department book I got somewhere. It ends at 1975, just so everyone's aware of that. But I would give it to new guys. Hey, read this. Why did we start? What's the big, what's happened in the city? which has shaped some of our laws and rules and standards and all kinds of other things that we've done. So know where we came from helps you know where you're going.
And I think since we're talking about company officers, I've always argued, and I'm not saying I'm right because I'm not always right.
You can argue about that.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're here. Dane's not. We should be arguing about that.
But I do think the most important any officer plays is a teacher. I've always thought, as a company officer, if you teach your personnel well, they're going to do well, whether it be on an incident or dealing with the public or, like you said, Chris, if they understand the history, they understand where they came from. So if it's a commissioner that they run into or a member of the public and they ask questions, they've got some depth to their answers and understanding that goes beyond, well, the truck's red and it goes really fast.
Right.
And they can explain in a more educated manner and sound better to the public.
So it sounds like the professional development program you have is not necessarily laid out like, okay, from years 1 through 5 as a firefighter, you do this. Here's what we do. Here are the specific things that a captain needs to know. But it's just a general organizational development on all about how the fire department operates outside of perhaps the tactics and the strategy and
and that's in it too. So there's a mix of it. What we did is we tried to take, and it's still open. It's evolving. We took things that company officers should know something about, again, so they could answer questions for their crew members. Firefighters have a question or don't understand, well, why do we do this? Or, well, then if you understand ISO, then you understand that you need this many training hours, or you understand that we get this many points for flushing hydrants. And that impacts the community because we get a better rating, and then it saves the community more money in insurance. And on down the road. So they understand the bigger picture to it. They don't have to necessarily know the exact numbers or the exact process, but they understand why. And so that's what some of the topics are that, so that a company officer would understand that and be able to explain it, whether it be to a firefighter or a member of the public. But also, then we do drive into the strategy and tactics too, because that was another thing that you see is, again, our new firefighter training is very, very thorough and specific and laid out. And then it's really on us. It's the administration and officers that we haven't been formally teaching a lot of this stuff as well as we should be. So those are some of the topics. There's a month of strategy and tactics where that's the idea of it, is you get all the company officers and battalion chiefs from a shift that are participating, and you can get their input. You can ask them questions and, hey, what do you do in this situation? Why do you do it that way? And one of the, I can't remember which month it was, I think it was the second month, we had scene size up and initial actions. And so one of the things that came out of that was a lot of our folks, our officers, especially the battalion chiefs, but some of the company officers too, have ICS cheat sheets that they've made their own cheat sheets that they use, and it works for them. And so we had a bunch of them. They're all different, so it's, again, it's not about what's right or wrong. It's a bunch of them put their cheat sheets into a folder so the whole department can access it. So we encouraged people to take a look at them. If you want to use one, take it, use it, but I'd encourage you to even develop it into your own. Use it and then make it even better, improve upon it, make it your own, use what works for you. But so there's a resource there where now you're that guy that gets the call. You show up at work that morning. Hey, your captain called in sick. Now you're the company officer for the day. Oh, crap. Okay, well, I've got those command sheets. I'm going to get those out and put them on a clipboard for myself.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And it's interesting. The command sheets I saw quite a few different ones. And, of course, mine was hijacked from an old assistant chief. Mm-hmm. Put my little spins on it, little changes on it. But, I mean, if Dane was sitting here, Dane would tell you exactly that. He couldn't understand my sheet, and I probably might not understand his sheet.
No, and that's what's funny is Dane actually uses the exact NIMS form.
Right.
Boring.
Square.
That's awesome, and that's what he likes, and that's what works for him, and that's great. And so we talked about that. Dane uses this. This guy uses this. We have one captain, company officer, that... I use a blank sheet. He said, I write it down from memory. I know he knows what he wants on there at an incident. So he writes, he uses a blank sheet every time. That's fine. It's not right or wrong. It's just making sure that you are running an ICS system using the correct terminology and assigning the tasks and the positions that need to be assigned to do it safely and appropriately.
All right. I would have expected that you all had one particular sheet that you were using department-wide for consistency, although that doesn't necessarily mean you get the best operations by doing that.
No, and that's one of the other things that we're trying to kind of, I don't want to say fight against it, but push back that we all have to be the same and operate the same. We're all different people, and so as long as, again, like with NIMS, you need to use the correct terminology. Now, whether you would handle an incident with divisions or groups, in most cases you can do it either way. It's not right or wrong. It's what you prefer and what works for the situation. And so we're trying to teach, learn the situation and how the assignments, which assignments work better in which situations, and then handle it as best you can. But instead of everybody's got to do it this way, and we tend to do that so much, and we see it with our shifts because we have three different shifts, and everybody will, all the shifts got to be the same. No, they don't. It's unrealistic. And so I like to push it back to the company officers. Well, okay, then let's make all you guys the same.
Yeah, make
you have to run your crews the same. And you're going to all of a sudden, you'll get the, And so it's getting away from this shift does it the right way, this one does it the wrong way, or this company does it the right way, and this to get away from that and get to, are you within the guidelines, like with NIMS? Are you using the correct terminology? Well, there's a lot of flexibility in how you can set up an incident. You can do it differently, but use
still
the correct terminology. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do it different every time.
Okay, yes.
So yeah, it's a brand new program.
Yeah.
And Craig is, we're all learning through it. You know, we all sat down and talked about 12 months of scheduling, what should be included, and we'll wing it, you know, for this 12 months and then move on next 12 months, talk about it again. Maybe there's a direction we need to go more in depth on. And maybe we need to identify maybe exactly who we want to be sitting in it.
Yep.
What should we be exactly teaching these guys? So right now we're just kind of throwing some pretty big topics out there.
We are.
We've had some good discussions on those meetings. It's been good. I think we're going in the right direction. I'm just not sure what direction it is. You know what I mean? I think it's the right direction, but how fast do we need to get there? What are we topics do we need to follow?
So what I'm hearing is not that you have the cradle-to-grave training program put together for first officers, but then it kind of expanded. But it's not that you said, what all do we need to cover? What does everybody need to know? But, hey, we need to be doing something. We should have a more formalized program put together. If we at least start on topics that we know we need to cover and put a year of it together, play with it, see what happens, and then see what we've missed, see what we need to change, see what we need to add or build upon. And so this is kind of like version one of your first thought at it, not saying this is the perfect comprehensive program, because if you're waiting for that to get there, you'll probably never get it started.
It's certainly not the Fire Officer 1 template. Officer 2, Fire Officer 12, whatever.
And there's a vehicle for that.
Right. Exactly.
So you can learn that.
Right.
And that's our approach to it is, and actually this month is, the topic is personal development. And so we cover credentialing in this month's topic and talk about, so here are some of the certifications you can get to improve yourself, and they're important and they're good and they're valuable. One of those is Officer 1. But it's not what this is. This is to teach you about that stuff, make you familiar with it, let you know it's available, it's out there, how you get it, that kind of stuff. But this is kind of almost set with the goal of, we want to see our candidates for promotion do better in the process.
Mm-hmm.
We want to set them up for success when they do get promoted, and we want to set them up for success when they're filling in. Instead of just throwing them in a position and, okay, how much NIMS ICS have you had? How much whiteboarding have you done? And some guys may have done a lot, because you can do it on your own pretty easy, but let's help walk them through some of this stuff. And that's where the evolution of the topics came from, was, well, guys always like strategy and tactics, so we got to have some of that in there. So we have several months of tactical type topics. But then, again, they need to know a little bit of our history. They need to know we're an accredited agency. They need to know a little bit about accreditation because they need to understand why we do certain things a certain way and how they work. Again, they're maybe not involved in the details of that process, but they need to understand it and how we do it and why we do it.
So I assume it's repeated on all three of your ships.
Right.
And since you were talking about it being on, I'll say Google Hangouts, but it wasn't Google Hangouts. What do you guys use?
GoToMeeting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's GoToMeeting, yes.
Square.
Oh, yeah.
but you know what? GoToMeeting just flipping works, though.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Because it's got the volume in there. Yeah.
Even I can run it.
So then that's available for people who are on vacation or off duty from their shift, but if they wanted to join that while they're off, they could. I'm assuming it's archived so people can play it back, those who missed it. If they wanted to go back and review on their own, they can. Is that
part of it? We record at least one of them each month. Some months we record a couple. We went into it initially with the idea of, okay, let's record the third one, because usually then you've had previous questions and you've improved it a little bit, but we end up sometimes recording the first or second. You're still going to get that solid base material out of it. But one of the other components of it is it's completely optional. And that was a discussion we had, too. Do you make it optional? Don't you make it optional? If you don't make it optional, well, who has to go? Is it guys that are testing and on the list? Is it guys that are eligible? Is it everybody? Isn't it? And so we thought this was a good way to, no, we'll let them figure it out. And part of the hope is, for those that are attending and learning and listening and participating, that they will improve how they do through promotional processes, but also they're going to do a better job, hopefully, when they're filling in and so forth, all across the board. So mm-hmm. It makes them better, makes them safer, gives them more understanding. And it's us giving them the tools we haven't given in the past. Us looking at it going, I've never had a run report class.
Right.
I've had 30 different people tell me how to do a run report, but mm-hmm. I've never had an official class. And so we're going, we need to give these guys an official class, or it's on us if they don't do a good job on the run report. Right. So working with them to help build their skills.
It's kind of filling in the gap, I guess, is what I would say. You know, we have our guy, new guys come off probation, so they got a year of probation to learn firefighter one and two skills. And then this is kind of filling in that gap. And then we also are working to try to improve our officer development system. So it's kind of a gap filler. It's also helping those officers by default, because we've never taught them that before.
Yep.
But it's also helping them. So it's kind of a filling a gap type thing.
Build those the knowledge, skills, and abilities to build the confidence.
Okay.
So that when they come in, if they come in, whether it be for an assessment center and a promotional process, or they're filling in and they get a working fire, that they have a little bit more confidence. Like the example again of the cheat sheet, ICS cheat sheet resource. We're giving you some resources, try and help and try and build your confidence and talk through what we do and why we do it this way and what works for this officer or that officer. And they can take what works for them and start building a confidence and teach them how to practice and how to get good at these skills.
I think that's great. I think almost any organization could start by taking a look at what's in your Fire Officer 1 class, for example, and seeing the things that they touch on as a theory, but never go into and never tell you how to do it. And even if it's just that, if you're starting off with ICS, tactics and strategy, and you take a look at some of the topics that Fire Officer 1 hints at, but never goes into how to do it or why to do it, just like you said with incident run reporting. Sure, that's a topic in Fire Officer 1. There are several different types of reports a fire department can give. And they consist of this, and these are all terribly important.
Yeah.
Boom, next topic. Hold it. What?
Yep.
All right. So
trying to grow off it.
Hopefully.
No offense to that people that teach Fire Officer 1 and Fire Officer
2. No, that's an important part.
No offense to it, but I can tell you I can read that.
Yeah.
That's how I learn more than sometimes sitting in a class. So we're trying to grow it, and sometimes it's specific to our department.
Yeah.
Obviously, how we do run reports might be different than how you do run reports, Jeff. Well, that's something they would have to learn. But while you're with us, we're going to teach you how we want to do the run reports to gather the data that
sure.
we need.
And I think, like Firefighter 1 teaches you what a hose and a nozzle is, and ways that you can apply a water stream to a fire, it doesn't teach you how the Fargo Fire Department fights fires. When you have an engine crew, what hose load do you use? How do you manipulate a hose? Do you manipulate it while you're flowing water or not? And under what conditions, what sizes of hose do you use? And so that's going to be different from Fargo, from Moorhead, from Detroit Lakes, from Minneapolis, St. Paul. Sure. So it gives you the basics. And it's like EMT class. You got a lot of information in EMT class. But if you go out and try to work on an ambulance or to provide real patient care out in the field after an EMT class, you're going to fall flat on your face because it doesn't give you everything that you need. It just gives you a base knowledge, but it doesn't really tell you how to apply it.
No,
how
and
to
that's,
field productively.
Like you said, we're trying to fill in the gaps and build some confidence. And then the other big key thing that Chris and I, you and I have always talked about that is our goal here is to set those that are coming up behind us up to take our positions and do better than we've done.
Right.
And move this organization, keep this organization moving in a good direction and keep improving it. And so if we can start teaching them some of that stuff ahead of time, these young folks, they're smart, they're talented, they're motivated, then they're going to be able to take that ball and they won't have to spend a couple of years like I did learning budgets and all of that. They'll kind of have a good basic running understanding, so they'll be able to just roll with it and keep moving forward. It would be the ideal.
All right. Yeah, I like that. I think now would be a good time to take a quick break, and maybe when we come back we can talk a little bit about who some of the most important officers are in the department. We kind of teased that at the beginning of the show here,
yes.
And now's our time to rip on Dane when we come back. But you are listening to Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Did Dane leave?
What?
Planning to head outdoors today? The National Shooting Sports Foundation reminds you to check the fire danger levels in your area. Whether target shooting, camping, or even parking a car with a hot exhaust, remember to take precautions. If you're going shooting in dry conditions, minimize the possible risk of fire by not using steel-jacketed or steel-core ammunition, tracer rounds, or exploding targets. As we know, wildfires have many possible causes. Don't be one of them.
Think fast. In less than 30 seconds, a small flame can become a big fire. Don't let your world go up in smoke. Have working smoke alarms and always stay in the kitchen when cooking at high temperatures. Learn more at usfa.fema.gov because fire is everyone's fight.
Did you know you don't need a license to broadcast on the internet? Keep that in mind as you listen to Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio, where we're talking professional development and we're talking officers and we're waiting for winter to set in the Great White North. We're kind of going out of order by
and
talking about what's happening.
And Dane's still gone.
Here. Yeah, he hasn't Dane's shown up yet. Here. Didn't show up on break. That's great. Still sick. Still a very sick individual. There's something wrong with him. Seriously, seriously wrong with him.
You just start calling him Sick Dane.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Dane since he's not here. Just the other day, might have been even yesterday, not quite sure, an article came out that Dane wrote on the importance of a company officer, captain, lieutenant, that kind of level.
Mm-hmm.
Well-written article. Hate to tell Dane that. Good article.
Well, he's not here, so you don't have to tell him to his face.
That's good.
Certainly makes a lot of sense and brings up some good points. So, I don't know. Jeff, what do you think the role of the company officer, captain, lieutenant, or whatever they're called in your department?
Well, kind of on our break, Craig was talking about how there's been the fire service argument about what's more important, education or training, skill development, experience, all that on the department. And of course, the crazy thing is that they're both equally important. I actually have one at 55%, one at 44%, and there's a 1% factor that I keep secret to myself. That's been my success. But that's part of it. It's 0.005%. But just like that, when we talk about officers, I could throw out the statement that I believe the success or failure of your organization can lie with the captains because of who they're able to influence and how long they're able to influence them. I could make counter arguments for battalion chiefs and for the chief of the department and for administrative chief officers. However, the reality is, of course, that all of them play a role in your organization being successful. So if you have great and motivated captains and you got a turd ball chief, you can have a real problem as an organization. But the same thing is, if you don't focus on the importance of the captains and what their sphere of influence is, even if you've got great officers in the rest of the department, but you don't focus on that, 'cause you just figure they're going to show up, they're going to bring guys and gals, and they're going to put water on fires, and they're going to put on Band-Aids, and life is great, then you're really going to miss the opportunities for your department to develop the staff, to get them on board with a unified mission, being customer service oriented, or whatever your goals and objectives are, because I believe it's really the captains who end up selling the crews on the goals and objectives of the department, the direction that you're going, the motivation, and the buy-in that you're going to have to what the department is trying to do. So if you don't have the captains bought into it, you're going to have a hard time gaining most of the rank and file, because their impression of the department is through their immediate supervisor. It's through the boss. That's the person they look up to. That's the person that they probably respect the most and that they know they have to work with on a daily basis. And they get their whole impression about what the department's attitude is, what their personality is, based on the captain that they've worked for. And then to a lesser degree, to the battalion chief that they see periodically, depending on the size of your department. And they will occasionally see the figurehead up there, the chief, say things or whatever, but that's just the chief. So the closer you get to them, the more that person's influential to you. But yeah, so where are the bulk of our folks, and where is the greatest amount of work going to happen, and where can the greatest amount of change occur if you capture them? And that's the firefighters being done through the captains.
No, absolutely. I think that pretty much sums up Dane's paper in a nutshell. I mean, I obviously went in greater detail.
All right, good night.
Well, yeah. Well, that took me less than 5 minutes. I don't know how much time he spent writing the article.
Why he's got to ramble on forever. But
I don't think you even took a breath.
It is. And I think, you know, I'm going to assume we've all been captains coming through the ranks. And, you know, when you're first a captain, you're gung-ho and excited. And you've got to struggle through the later years of being a captain. But you definitely can tell. I remember working for captains that were very good captains and very bad captains. And when I say that, I found good captains to be the guys that wanted to train, that wanted to make sure that the station was clean and the trucks were in shape. They never wanted to be that shift that left stuff for other people. In turn, when I saw bad captains, I saw lazy captains, captains that bad-mouthed everything, never supported anything that the department was doing. And that's where I learned to be a captain for the most part. When I tell new captains, I always tell guys, remember the good captains you had, remember the bad captains. Take the good things from the good captains, take the bad things from the bad captains, and don't do those. Remember how you felt when they did that. You know, so they have the most influence. And when Dane's point is, they spent, in our department, we're 24-hour shifts, they spent 24 hours with these three, four individuals. They see the battalion chief once or twice on a run, maybe, or if we stop by. They see the assistant chiefs even less. They see the chief even more or less. It's an inappropriate way of saying it, but you know what I mean. So it's just as it moves up, you see him less and less. Sometimes you just hear it in a memo, or you hear from the chief on TV or whatever. But they spend that time with that company officer. That company officer is one of the most important people in the department.
And that's where those strong bonds come from. You know, when you talk about the fire service as a family, it is. It's because just like your own family, where you spend overnights at home with them, you spend overnights at a fire station with these people, and you grow those tight, tight bonds. And so that's where the buddy-to-boss topic is always so important and so out there and even so difficult. And I would guess, my hunch is, I know I've always struggled with it, most of the people I know have struggled with it, so my hunch is it's pretty much nationwide, worldwide, that people struggle with being a boss in that tight of a social situation, because it's a, yes, you're in the work environment, but there's a social environment to it too, and that's where I think, boy, that company officer role is so critical. And I think, this is just a hunch I have, but I kind of think the newer a person is, the more moldable they are. They're still figuring out the organization, what you do, how you do it, what attitude you do it with, what level of motivation you do it with. And I think if you get them with a good company officer, they're getting set up for success whether they know it or not. And yes, part of it's the individual, but you get with the wrong company officer, and thank God there are not many out there. They're very, very few.
Right.
But that can actually submarine a person's career and future because they got the wrong attitude right off the bat and learned the wrong things, the wrong habits, the wrong, the lack of pride, those types of things.
I think we've all seen that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's some good individuals that have just died, in a sense, on the department. I'm just here to work, not doing anything extra. I'm just doing the minimum I can because that's how I was taught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that I was very fortunate in my career to have great company officers that were excited and, you know, they wanted to do well for the department, for the citizens of the town, for their crew. You saw that, and you learn from those things. But I've seen guys that, holy cow, I don't even want to be sitting in the same room as these guys.
Well, and I wondered, is there a frustration that feeds off that? Because, again, the vast majority of the company officers are great guys. They are motivated, great teachers, right attitude. And so then if you do get with one that isn't that way, you do see everybody else around you growing and improving and probably enjoying their job more, having fun, learning. And I could see where that just even feeds on your frustration and the attitude issues too.
Right. You know, I think Dane mentions attitude quite a few times in the article, and I think that is the most important thing. I've 26 years, I've never come to work with a bad attitude. Hungover, yes. Tired, yes.
Not in quite a few years. Because nowadays, two beers is
two beers
all
max
I can handle.
But,
but in the old days.
In the old days, I used to be able
I'm
to
not as good as I once was.
But I never had a bad attitude. I mean, I hope to think. I'm sure there was some days people could point to and remind me of. But for the most part, I got to come to a job I love to do. And I hope that I got to influence the people around me. But I've been around guys that that are just Debbie Downers and against the department and the city's not paying them enough, or I'm angry, or, you know, I just never could imagine working a job that I hated. And if I hated it that much, I'd leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I struggle with the understanding of this, but mm-hmm. there are guys we see out there that cause some problems.
Yeah.
Or, you know, instead of, you know, I like the captains that something will come down from the top and I'll explain it to captains. And I like captains that will call me. We have a great discussion. You know, even if they disagree with it, we have a great discussion. And then those captains are able to go back to their employees and explain the process, what happened and why it is. And hopefully not in a negative, condescending way. And we move on.
Well, and that kind of touches on a good point is our ownership of it too, and not to go back on what we talked about the first part with the professional development, but part of it's on us to give them the tools so that they can explain it rather than just dump it all. Like
exactly.
We need to be helping the company officers
mm-hmm.
yeah.
to do their job, and instead of just, we can't just sit back and go, well, you need to do a great job, and not give them the tools and resources they need to do it. And so that's another way that we're hopefully helping them. Again, it's new, but they need those resources so that they can answer those questions and lead their crews.
It's a tough position. Captain is the most influential position. We've said it. Dane said it in his article. Middle management sucks because you are stuck right in the middle.
Yep.
You are hearing it from both sides. You know, I'm okay with hearing it coming from up. That's fine. But when you're stuck right in the middle, you got me calling you on the phone telling you you're going to do this, and then you got blue shirts or firefighters telling you they hate that.
Yeah.
And they're stuck. They're stuck.
And there are times where you feel that if you're lucky, you barely have enough information available to understand why
right.
this thing is important or why they're asking me to do this
right.
thing now.
Yep.
I mean, you might know what they want you to do, but the why part about it
right.
and the how it fits into the bigger picture and what it's going to do for you over the long term is, I think, where a lot of times we as chief officers fall down, or organizations fall down, in not being able to include them or passing that information along about how all these pieces fit together and what this is going to mean down the road.
Right.
It takes a lot more time and effort. And also, we tend to think that that's maybe not at that level. And it's not to be derogatory, but You think of the captain's role as to leading the crews and doing productive work and accomplishing tasks, but the more of the planning and organizing, knowing the big picture, is now more at that battalion chief's level and above. But without understanding where all this fits in, it's hard for that frontline supervisor to be able to motivate the crews when they're not even sure about where this is coming from or what it means.
The middle management could be a whole other topic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really could.
These
guys that are sitting around at the stations, waiting, mm-hmm. Training, doing all they're working hard all day, going on calls. They are making some major decisions out there. They go out on the street, and they've dealt with Johnny that's laid on the floor for the last. They've dealt with him 17 times in the last week. They've got to be the ones that keep up a good attitude. They have to be the ones mm-hmm. that are, showing the empathy and getting involved and trying to get help instead of just complaining about it.
Right. So we talked a little bit that passing that information along is important, and it tied into what we were talking about at the beginning about professional development, why maybe just being in individual pockets is not nearly as important because captains need to know some of that bigger stuff, and also then you tend to realize that the chief officers sometimes pick up things by going back to stuff that you just assume everybody knows, but maybe you hadn't hit on for quite a while, depending on your role in the organization. But also one important factor is picking the right people to be captains. And we've had a previous show where we've talked about this from a recruiting standpoint of what makes good firefighters, the technical aspect or the personality and the motivation, the attitude. And that falls right along to captain as well, too, because I remember a recent side conversation about if you're going through that promotional process and you have that person and they might have written a good test and they might be giving you all the right interview questions, but you know that they have been kind of a lazy underperformer as a firefighter, why would you expect that to change as a captain, that you're not also going to get a lazy underperforming captain, or now a lazier, more underperforming captain, because I've got people who can do more of my work for me than before when I couldn't say no. And I've seen this in lots of organizations and personal experience as well, too, where you promote somebody and you expect a change, maybe with this promotion now and with the tools that they've got, and now that they'll have some authority and they can see some growth opportunities here at this new position, that this is the fire that's going to spark them to start to achieve their potential. If they haven't been working it like a rock star to build up to this at their own level, it's kind of crazy to think that it's just going to happen magically with a promotion. And it usually doesn't, and it usually results in that person who's now influencing the other two or three members of their crew in that same type of opinion, and then you're breeding that attitude as your official company stance. Yeah, I mean, so as far as the guys out at Station 142 know, this is the way the fire department is, because that's what they see day in and day out, even though you might have six other stations where that's not the case. And you can apply that level same to the battalion chief and the further up the organization you go, but it's really important to promote for aptitude to a certain degree, but their attitude, their work experience, and their motivation is probably just, I believe it's actually even more important than the technical skills. If you've got a motivated person with a good head on their shoulders, makes good decisions, and has a good attitude, the rest of the parts of the job you can train as they move up. But somebody's got all the training and the certs and writes a good test, but they're a turd, they're going to be a turd captain.
I agree 100%. And, Craig's heard me say this all the time, and it's obviously a quote from a famous individual, but when someone shows you who they are, believe them.
Yeah.
Truly believe them, because they're not changing.
Right.
That's who they are. So when I became a battalion chief and got involved in making promotions as a captain, which, by the way, is one of the most difficult things you'll do in the fire service,
mm-hmm.
You realize how important this is, similar to the article that Dane wrote. It's a very important position. So I used to, I didn't want to discourage people, but I had in the back of my mind who was going to be the captains and who wasn't. So I'd kind of, I don't know if I did them a disservice, sometimes by saying, keep up the good work, you're doing fine, not your time, things like that. Now my new attitude is, here's the deal, you got to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be the captain, you got to be the guy, and if you want my name behind you, you got to be that guy. I'm not putting up for a mediocre guy, or I know that can be lazy, or this and that. You have to be the guy.
And there are a lot of good guys out there now. So
yeah.
That's the other thing, is it's getting more competitive. So when you talk about the aptitude, attitude part, I completely agree. the attitude is so critical, and there needs to be a certain level of aptitude. We've reached a point where we've got plenty of guys with the aptitude. They can all do the job. But now you're trying to choose who would do the best at it.
Right.
And that's where it gets very difficult. And for the guys that are going through the processes these days, it's getting harder. So I give them credit for sticking it out, going through it, because it's very difficult.
Yeah, it's great to be able to have five guys right off the top of my head that boom, 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 they could be captains. Unfortunately, only one gets it.
And that's where I am glad I'm not in the chief's shoes when he has to make those calls. Like you said, Chris, I look at some of these and I go, gosh, we got quite a few really great candidates here. I don't know which one to choose. I'm glad I don't have to do it. And that's maybe why he gets paid the big bucks, because those are tough calls.
Yeah.
So what you're telling me is not everybody is going to retire from this job as the chief of their department.
Well,
and not everybody's going to retire as an assistant chief or as a battalion chief.
It's funny how that
or
goes.
Or maybe even as a captain.
It's a big pyramid.
Yeah.
One spot at the top, and in our department, 105, 106 guys at the bottom.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
I know it's really easy to fall into the trap of, well, gosh, look at what they've been doing lately to get prepared for this. If lately means the last 3 months, and you look before that, and you haven't been seeing the same thing, you're seeing the show that's being put on just prior to the promotional process. And I've fallen victim to that perception, boys, that they've really gotten motivated. Now, I want to see the person who's been motivated for 2 years.
Yeah.
Hasn't been motivated now that they know that a test is coming up or that a position is going to become open. So the people who are performing every day because they're trying to improve themselves, they're competing against themselves and not other people for an open position are the people that I want there, because they're going to continue to do the same thing in that next job that they're doing. They might not be the most senior. They might not be, this is hard to say, but they might not be the most educated. They might not have the most credentials. The paper stuff only gets you part way, and we've promoted off of paper, and we've promoted off of seniority to a point too, and we've realized that they were not the best candidate.
And that's where it is getting more competitive, and because of that, that's part of what we've been talking about too, is so we're looking for the well-rounded candidate, because they all have education, they all have experience, so let's look at the whole candidate. Let's look at education, experience, credentials, community involvement, department involvement, experience with projects. There's all kinds of different things that help make you a better officer.
Yeah.
So it's going kind of to the next level, I think, in some ways.
Mm-hmm. I would agree, especially when Dane's not here. So there we go.
Yeah, I'll agree with Dane when he's not here. When the chief officers meeting, I'll argue with Dane about it, and saying that's not true. But
I know Dane wrote the article, but if he was here, he'd probably have a different opinion he would share with us. Maybe we'll have to save that for the next show.
He probably wouldn't have. He really wouldn't have anything to say. He'd have just sat here quiet listening.
Dirty little secret is he's been sitting in the corner the whole time. I think he's just mad at us. He doesn't want to talk. Nice. Well, anything else on your guys' minds tonight?
No, I don't think so. I think I enjoyed the conversation, and always look forward to input and feedback from people on stuff that, again, we're trying to make things better and hopefully improve what we're doing in the fire service. And it's exciting to see across the nation, across the world, some of the changes that have come about. Gosh, it just keeps getting better in a lot of ways. And so let's keep trying things and not be afraid to try something and fail with it. And, okay, then we'll try it a different way, or we just won't do it anymore. But I see more and more of that, where we used to be really afraid to do things and try things. I see less of that these days, where you see more departments, more people trying things. And so please keep doing that.
Yeah, I don't discount the well-planned out change agent that you're putting together, but probably more positive changes have occurred by people just trying something, getting excited by it, and moving on to the next thing, or enhancing or improving or changing the thing that they started with, and having that build on itself. So picking a direction and adjusting as you go can accomplish a lot.
It's one of the biggest things is, you know, as I would tell chief officers, is keep an open mind. Keep an open mind. I know you're stuck sometimes with city commissions and mayors and budgets and stuff like that, but just keep that open mind and listen to these guys coming up. young, energetic firemen are the future, you know, and we should get them involved as much as we can in almost anything we do.
Give them as many skills as we can as they move up through.
I would not have a problem, and it'd probably be pretty easy for some of these guys to do my job and do it better than I'm currently doing. I have no problem with that, but that's the goal. I mean,
I
want the fire department to flourish, continue. We want the citizens to be safe. We've seen kind of all kinds of different things that have changed in the last 26 years that we've had to adapt. You know, you want those guys to be out there and being excited about it and willing to learn, look into things. I think that's important for these younger firemen coming up. We want good chief or captains on that are leading them. You want good battalion chiefs that are open. You want assistant chiefs that stay out of the way. Yeah. And you want a chief to handle the budget. So
yeah.
I'm just kind of joking about the assistant chiefs. But I think that's the way that's the future. These guys are the future of the fire service. We should be listening and trying. And if they want to go pull a hose a different way, go pull that hose. You know, and maybe they'll see that it is a better way, or maybe they see that it's not the best way. Give them the opportunity.
There we go. Well, if you've taken anything away from the show tonight, try something at home.
Besides, see how it works. Besides Dane's a sicko.
Yeah.
Besides that, did you take anything?
Don't try bringing Dane.
Sorry,
home.
Dane. We
Jeff
just,
can't drink.
We have to do
house.
It.
There we go. Yeah. I've got so many issues.
We love you, Dane.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. Hope you got something out of the show, and hope you're interested in turning in to the next show in about 5 weeks. So thanks for listening, and good night.
Good night. Be safe.
Thank you for listening to Tailboard Talk. Don't forget to tune in each week, Monday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific, for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. You can also subscribe to all of our shows on iTunes. Just search for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Check out our educational programs and consultation services. They're all available at tailboardconsulting.com. There you can find links to all of our shows and our magazine articles. Thanks for listening, and join us again next month for another episode of Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.